Hi, I'm Graham Lasso, and you're listening to Eat, Sleep, Chelsea Repeat with Chris, Craig, and Brady.
Welcome to the Eat, Sleep, Chelsea Repeat pod. The headline this week, Chelsea slot 3 past the hungover champions. Today, I'm joined by our good friends Brady and special guest, Liverpool fan Jack Elwood and friend of the pod. How you guys doing?
Hey, boys.
How you doing, Jack? How does it feel to win the league, but more importantly, probably be the back-to-back winner of the ESCR FPL League?
Well, yeah. It feels good being champions. Like, start of the season, I don't think I did this part of this in the first game, so I maybe didn't talk to you about expectations, but this definitely exceeds them. I thought it'd be a transition season to some extent, but yeah, became clear relatively early on that we were just getting better and better, and we didn't really have any big challenges once the Chelsea challenge faded away in December.
But the brief challenge.
I think we changed our group WhatsApp to the title challenge, or the title contenders.
Yeah, for 1 week. I think it was Spurs away. We'd be in 4-3, right? They put the table up when we were celebrating, like, here we go, and then that lasted about 2 minutes.
Then yeah, now the group's just back to the normal title.
And ironically, it was Liverpool's rivals, Everton, who actually started the downfall. We went to Everton away 0-0, and yeah, the winter, the dark winter set in from there for us. So yeah,
Dyche is Everton as well.
Yeah, that was, yeah, got diced, sliced and diced. As it was 0-0.
That was a much better pun than the one we came up with today. Right, let's talk about the game, because that was fantastic. Arguably Chelsea's most complete performance of the season. We'll discuss that later. Chelsea with 3.13 XG versus Liverpool's 1.05. Ran out 3-1 winners, 17 shots to 11, 7 on target for Chelsea, only 2 on target for Liverpool. And in fact, it was not until 70 minutes that they had their first shot on target. Very unlike this Liverpool team that scored in 31 Premier League games straight. How did you see... Let's start with likes and dislikes. And Jack, you're excluded from this section, but we'll get a dislike first from Brady.
There wasn't many dislikes. There was a bit of a dip when we went 2-0 up. I think it was a combination of, maybe Jack can talk about this as well, where Liverpool sort of seemed to spring out of their hangover. I don't know if they took some sort of hangover pills, and for between 60 and 85 minutes, they were pretty lively. But there was a little dip, but to be honest, there wasn't really that many dislikes in this game for us. I disliked that Palmer goal didn't go in, the touchline one. That would have been amazing. But yeah, other than that, I mean, I've had plenty of dislikes and plenty of grumbles about first half, second half, you know, incomplete performances, but there wasn't really much on Sunday, to be honest.
Yeah, I think dislikes obviously you struggle for. I'm going to go with Nicholas Jackson not being on the same wavelength as basically anyone on the same pitch as him. And obviously, there's a slight borderline in his temperatures, but I do think it's...
It's not temps yet, mate.
You know, obviously, Nicholas Jackson might pop up in temperatures at some point. But there's no chemistry on that top end of that pitch at all with Jackson and anyone. And it seemed like Palmer and him had something going last season. You know, together they seemed to get on really well. I know Palmer really sort of encouraged Jackson as well when he got his head down in certain moments, missing really big chances. But yeah, that seems to just evaporate now. In fact, they look like strangers up there at the top end of the pitch at times. Which is obviously a real disappointment. But yeah, I guess more on Nicholas Jackson in the freezing section. Jack, have you got anything you'd like to mention just overall for the game before we go to likes?
Well, I think the game just panned out kind of half how I was expecting it to. It clearly hung over 5 or 6 changes made, there was just no intensity from us. And obviously, once the early goal went in as well, we just didn't show anything until, like Brady said, when it went 2-0, we had a decent little spell in the game. I don't know if that was us just like finally waking up a bit, or if Chelsea sat back a bit more. We created a few chances over the 15-minute spell or so, but yeah.
One falling to the main man, Darwin Núñez. Great chance with a header.
Yeah, you just come to expect that these days.
Do you think he's off in the summer? Just a little side note.
Yeah. Well, I don't. Yeah, I think so. I certainly would sell him now. Like,
yeah,
I've stood by him probably more than a lot of Liverpool fans have. But yeah, I don't think it's ever going to happen for him now. And his minutes have been getting less and less, to be honest. And
yeah, it doesn't seem like the manager really fancies him much at all, does it?
No, he's the last good game I can remember him having was Carabao Cup semi, second leg versus Spurs. He had one of his good days and he was unplayable. And that just gives you that little bit of hope that he might kick on, but then he just goes back to usual. And he's not even doing the things he did well before anymore. He's always missed chances, obviously, but he used to, you know, be the chaos factor. And he could, you know, take two defenders out of the game and just be strong and fast and be a handful, but he doesn't even really seem to be doing that anymore. And yeah, that header from 5 yards yesterday, that's just, yeah, just sums him up really.
Yeah, 25 years old now as well, so it looks like a time where, yeah, it's not really, can't even make an excuse that he's really a young player anymore.
No, he's had enough time, two good managers coaching him, and it's just not improving. So yeah, I think we cut our losses, get what we can back for him, and sign someone else.
Yep. Brady, what have you got for me for likes for the game?
I mean, there's plenty of likes about the game, but, and this is pretty shameless, it's the first time that we've beat Liverpool, City or Arsenal under the Clear Lake ownership, which is a pretty amazing stat, really. Jack, do you know the last time?
Is it that amazing?
I think it's pretty amazing. Is that three seasons? So you've had 18 bites at the cherry?
Yeah, that is pretty amazing. That's a lot of chances.
You've had close to 20 bites at the cherry. You know, it's nine at home. It's pretty mad.
We've had a lot of draws at home, I guess, haven't we?
I mean, we all play poker and I work for a sports book and stuff. We know all about odds. I mean, Chelsea have not been like, you know, they've been like 30, 40% or whatever to win the game at home, or 25%. I mean, to win none in 18 is pretty mental. Yeah. Jack, you know the last time that Chelsea beat Liverpool? Probably.
Well, you're telling me it's before Clear Lake. Can't.
It was during COVID.
Oh, right. Well, that's probably why it's very forgettable. No. Well, remind me, what was the game?
It was Mason Mount goal in the corner, 1-0 under Tuchel.
At Anfield?
At Anfield, yeah. It was a 1-0 Tuchel, you know, not boring, but shut the game down 1-0. So, yeah, that was March 2021. So, over 4 years ago.
We've had a miserable time against Liverpool for so long, haven't we? And so many games that we could have won as well that have ended, you know, 0-0. We lost on penalties.
Two finals went to penalties. Yeah.
So many games. Have been a poor opponent for us. So, yeah, we made yesterday's victory even more enjoyable. I'm going to go for, as my like, the young Cobham centre-back partnership. Because I thought we defended really well yesterday, especially, well, again, a little bit of a spoiler for temperatures, but especially Trev Chalobah. But that partnership together, and I just love featuring the same centre-back duo in consecutive games. It's something that previous managers didn't really do. Something that really annoyed me about Pochettino was continuously changing defensive partnerships, rotations, whatever, for league matches. I like the idea of centre-backs getting to know each other and playing together. And Chalobah and Colwill are starting to form, you know, a decent partnership. And like I said, in the build-up was Liverpool didn't have a shot on target until the 70th minute, which is, you know, amazing for them. And it's not just yesterday that we've been good defensively. We've been good defensively now for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we have defensively. I think I also heard a stat that actually in the last six or seven games, we're actually, I think, third in terms of X conceded. So the team, even though they haven't been free-flowing goals-wise, have defensively been getting better. And yeah, I think this partnership's been a part of that.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, let's move on to temperatures and let's talk about the players.
Time to see whose form's on top, who's heating up, whose temperature's dropped, who's been playing well and who's not. It's freezing, warming up, boiling hot.
Okay, Brady, you can do the honours. You're up first.
I guess what we'll do is we'll do the usual freezes, and Jack can just talk about the player in general, what they think about them as a Chelsea player. I guess we can do that. Or Jack can just chime in and dig in on whatever. I mean, the freezer is pretty obvious in this game, unfortunately. This player on Thursday night in Stockholm on Thursday, he scored his second goal. He scored two goals, and he did the kind of talking kind of motion, like, you know, to kind of say, talking with his hands, saying, you know, I'm back. You can stop talking about me now. And everyone's talking about him again because he was very poor in this game. And it's Nick Jackson. It really is one step forward, one step back, two to the side, forward and over, whatever. It wasn't a good look for him. And I thought this was a game he'd really do well in against the kind of... He always seems to do quite well against high-line teams, which obviously Liverpool would fall into that category. And obviously Liverpool weren't 100%, so I thought he did pretty well in this game, but he was pretty poor. Just 69% pass accuracy, didn't really generate any XG in this game. I think he had 2p roller shots, 0 successful dribbles, just nothing. Couldn't hold up the ball effectively, very poor in this game. And yeah, I think it's going to be a case of the last three games will define whether he'll have a narrative, will kind of define whether he'll be the striker for next season, or they'll be looking for maybe him as a backup and getting a main striker, because at the moment he really is on the knife edge of, I think, if he really pushed on and got 4 or 5 goals in the last few games, then maybe you go with him as a 9. But if not, then I think they're going to be looking to maybe replace him with a kind of more senior 9 in the summer.
Yeah, Jack, as a rival fan, obviously Nicholas Jackson is much maligned by a lot of the Chelsea fan base, but also, you know, people are up and down on him. As a rival fan, what do you make of him?
Probably a lot of the things I just said about Darwin probably apply to Jackson as well. Like,
yeah,
he has games where he looks great, he's dangerous, and it feels like it's coming together. But then, yeah, other times you watch him and he just looks clueless. And the chemistry thing earlier in the season, or maybe previous seasons as well, him and Palmer looked like they had a good relationship and it was starting to click together. But since Jackson had an injury earlier this season, right, and since he's come back from that, I haven't seen much of him. And yeah, if I was a Chelsea fan, I wouldn't be hoping to there'd be another 9 by next season. Like, maybe he's okay as backup squad man, but yeah, I just don't think he's good enough if you want to make that next step, basically.
Yeah, I think one of the positions that's really holding the team back is striker, and it's not just the finishing, obviously the missing of big chances, it's sort of the intelligence and link up play as well. You know, he's not a creative player, Nicholas Jackson. There was one moment where he's, you know, quite significantly offside that he ran in behind yesterday, but that's what, you know, that's the highlight of what he's doing on the pitch, is his movement and pace and getting in behind high lines. You know, against low blocks he's offering even less as well. You know, Chelsea have struggled this season to break down low blocks over periods of time, not really recently, but earlier in the season. And one of the reasons for that, I think, is that Jackson is just in tight spaces. You know, you can't rely on him to even control the ball. So he has got some good attributes, Nicholas Jackson. But yeah, I think, you know, we've sort of alluded to it a little bit as the season's wrapped up here. I think it's pretty obvious that Chelsea will be very, very keen to add an elite striker in the summer. It could definitely elevate our team quite significantly. All right, let's do warming up, because obviously we all, there was only really one freezer. We don't need to talk about any other players.
Warming up for me, I mean, you mentioned him earlier, it was my boy Trevor Chalobah. I mean, before he goes for a 30 million plus 5 million add-on move to Crystal Palace in the summer, just doing a bit of projection to the future there. Yeah, it's just a really good, solid performance, and that's what he is. He isn't a 10 out of 10 or even a 9 out of 10 centre-back, but he's just a solid... You get an averaged out of like a 6.5, 7, 7.5 out of him, but he was actually like maybe like an 8 out of 10 in this game. Just very solid, good interceptions. There was a really good moment where, I can't remember the Liverpool player on the right, but they had a choice between to go to Darwin across the line and or Salah, and, you know, they actually... Trev thought to himself, they're not going to pass to Darwin, so he actually intercepted the ball for Salah, but some good game intelligence. He's also pretty good on the ball. 7 passes into the final third. Just all round like a decent centre. You know, he used to be a midfielder, and like a lot of midfielders, they kind of move back to centre back. But yeah, I mean, it very likely is goodbye this time. He's got 3 years left on his contract, so he doesn't have to go. But I think he'll be part of the exodus this summer. But yeah, be a teary goodbye, and but he'll leave with his head held high. And like, yeah, I mean,
you've written his obituary already. Like,
I think he will go. I think, you know, that Maresca always refers to Wes Fofana in every press conference. Like, we miss him, we miss Wes, we miss Wes. So I think it will be Fofana and Cole Will going forward. And then obviously there's some links to Mark Gahey and some other centre-backs. So, I mean, unless Trev wants to hang around, he does seem to just somehow stay at the club. But I think this summer he will go. And I don't want him to, but I think he will. I mean, I'd rather Bad Shield win, but I just don't think they'll go in that direction. So... he was really good in this game.
Just talking about the game alone, yeah, he obviously had a really good performance, and not just performance on the pitch in terms of defending, but also like personality on the pitch as well. That interception that you're talking about for Salah, he really celebrated that afterwards as well, got the crowd going at the shed in there. You know, it was important to him to you know, to preserve the lead at that point. The game was important to him. You could tell that just across our whole team yesterday as well, not just Trev, but the game was very important to the players. You felt the urgency, the energy right from the start. Obviously, getting the early goal helps with that. You know, Trev's come back and had his moments. He would be a good utility squad option if it wasn't for pure profit. The sale being very valuable to us.
He's a bit of a Loftus-Cheek in defence, a little bit. He, you know, he can go in different positions, but he's probably just not quite good enough to just play in a team every week, really, long term. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Just a bit
like that. Yeah. Happy with the warming up. I'm going to go for my boy, Noni Madueke on the left wing.
Tune's changed a little bit there.
Sorry?
Your tune's changed a little bit, Noni. You haven't always been like that.
I didn't realise. I wasn't familiar with his left wing game.
That is true.
I've never seen him play left wing until a couple of weeks ago, and now I think you even put in the WhatsApp group earlier, maybe we don't need to sign a left winger. You know, I think he's impressed everyone playing this left wing position. I love how positive he is on the ball, and he is a threat to come inside as well and shoot with his right foot. I think we talked about this in Everton. It was something Neto wasn't doing at all when he was out on the left wing and Noni was on the right. And also, just I feel like the game is important to him, as in terms of, you know, the different personality. Noni Madueke comes across as a very off the pitch, a very relaxed personality. Like, he wouldn't care as much as he does on the pitch. You know, he's very urgent. He does work hard, even though he's not the best, you know, at pressing. He does still try. And I'm just impressed with him at the moment. I think he's doing really well.
What do you think of Madueke as a player, Jack? Because I'm, you know, we kind of go back and forth with him, a bit neutral. And what do you think of him, like, externally?
A bit mixed, really. I've seen him. He's just very inconsistent, isn't he? Sometimes looks like he could set the world alight, but other times just looks like a really unintelligent footballer. Makes poor decisions and things aren't going his way, and the fullback maybe getting the better of him. He'll just disappear and
sulk a little bit, I guess, as well. Yeah,
I think he's okay. I did think he had a good game yesterday, though. I can't say I've watched every Chelsea game recently, so I don't know how. I can't really comment on the switch from right wing to left wing. But yeah, he was definitely a threat yesterday.
What I like about him is just constantly, Liam Tooney said on the Straight Up Podcast that he's constantly aggressive. He's very good. Like I've said it, like, even from his first game under Lampard, when he played Bournemouth, really good at just getting from the touchline to the corner of the box. It's when he gets there sometimes that's the problem. But he does, I mean, against Everton, he could have easily had two goals with his right foot. Pickford, you know, made some really good saves. So I don't think they will keep him at left wing. I think they really want the two inverted on each side. But Neto is really poor at left wing and much, much, much better at right wing. So it is good to have that option. But I mean, I'd much rather have Noni at left wing than Garnacho, I'd say that much. So we'll see how it goes in the summer.
Oh, didn't you see Garnacho's goal yesterday? Fantastic goal he scored against Brentford.
The odd goal from the Garnacho, mate. The consolation against Brentford, mate. I've seen enough, don't worry.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go to boiling hot. There's actually a lot of options for boiling hot. There's probably three standouts, but I guess you're going to pick the low hanging fruit.
Well, if you're gonna give me the low hanging fruit, hand it to me, Craig. I'll take it. Yeah, it's Palmer again. It's Palmer again in boiling hot. I mean, he's actually been in the cold tundras of wherever you want to be, Antarctica.
He's been in the freezer of.
I don't think Tommy Palmer's been boiling hot. Have you been boiling hot this calendar year? He might not have. He hasn't been boiling hot a long, long time. But he was, I mean, look, you're playing against a Liverpool team that are on the beach, and they were Liverpool. I mean, they were clearly a half gas for a lot of the game, you know, celebrating their title victory in the days previous. But you could tell he had his swagger back a little bit, his mojo back a little bit. And yeah, I mean, I think Lavia was maybe the difference. Lavia and him linked up really well. They're both in the City Academy, where actually Maresca was a coach. That have actually, you know, kind of that muscle memory thing where they're in training, they've worked together. But yeah, I mean, he actually took some shots in this game. And obviously, he scored the penalty, but he actually just was more aggressive with his decision-making. There's been a lot of games recently where he's kind of decided against shooting or against that aggressive pass, but he took some more risks in this game. And yeah, he reveled in a big game. And the one thing you can say about Palmer sometimes is some of his goals and big moments, he has been a bit of a flat-track bully at times. So, okay, it was a penalty. But to score that penalty in a kind of a big game and seal the game was a really good moment for him. So I really hope he can kick on for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, he ran the show yesterday when you're at the game. I know I watched a little bit back of Gary Neville's commentary, and he was glowing about Cole Palmer. But when you're actually
Gary Neville orgasmic, wasn't it? You know, it was just loving it.
When you're in the stadium, it really is like you kind of feel it that he's just running the show a bit, Cole Palmer yesterday, which we haven't felt for a while. You're right in that, and trying a few things. The first time past Madueke. I know Tsimikas is not the best defender. Jack, you can probably tell us a bit more about that. But, you know, there was a first-time pass through behind Tsimikas that was really good as well. And obviously, yeah, like you said, I wish that goal had gone in where he did Alisson with the eyes and it just obviously went off the inside of the post. And he was fantastic again and just so happy for him at the end. Well, happy for us because that put the game to bed, but happy for him to get a goal as well. His sort of performance deserved. In the game. I know Gary Neville was talking as well post-match about England and where Palmer might feature for us in the World Cup qualifiers and obviously the World Cup eventually in summer 2026, saying that, you know, we've probably got to find a way to get Cole Palmer in the team and not really as much Phil Foden. It's more, the focus is more about getting Palmer in the team. What do you think about England, Jack, and Palmer and Foden, Bellingham? How are we going to fit all these guys in the team?
Well, yeah, on current form this season, Foden's probably out of that equation now. So
you don't think we need to find a way of starting him?
When the last tournament was on, I did sort of think we did. Like Foden was obviously Player of the Year last season, but right now, no, I don't think Phil Foden gets into England's best 11.
Really, yeah. I do agree with you, but it's just unbelievable that we've come from where we were to being like, yeah, I guess just Saka, Palmer, Bellingham, these are more important players to get into the team right now than Foden is, for sure.
Yeah, something's going on there with Foden. It's not clear what's gone on. Like the drop-offs from last season's ridiculous. But yeah, it happens with players at Man City all the time. They lose a bit of form, and Pep just doesn't use you, and then all of a sudden you're back, you have a couple of good games, and he'll go on a good run. And by the time this tournament comes around, then Phil Foden could well be in the mix.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of players at City, like Grealish as well is another good example of player that comes to mind straight away when you think about players just losing form and then just not featuring at all. Right, boiling hot for me is Chelsea's player of the season, Chelsea's players player of the season, and in my opinion, before the penalty yesterday, the man of the match in this game, Moises Caicedo. He was, again, an unbelievably consistent player. no matter where he plays, midfield, right back, he's always there, putting in an incredible work rate, up and down the pitch, 5 of 8 ground duels won, 3 of 3 aerials. He's one of the most underrated parts of Caicedo's game is how good he is in the air. He's so competitive and can jump so high for his size. You look like he might be outmatched in a lot of situations, and he's not. But that just shows with his determination as well. Only 2 errant passes. I know Romeo Lavia didn't even give the ball away once as well. So, yeah, I mean, I just want to talk about him as well as overall aspect. Winning the player of the season and the player's player, Moises Caicedo, Brady.
I mean, I love Caicedo. I mean, I think I've spoken about Caicedo a lot. I think he's a wonderful player. What's the perception about Caicedo from, well, maybe Liverpool fan, you're a bit biased because obviously you nearly bought him, but what do you think the perception is externally? Do you think football fans are starting to see him, you know, as we see him, Jack, or still maybe there's a little bit on the fence with him?
No, I think he's probably seen by most as he's gone into that sort of elite category.
Yeah,
this season especially. Like, I was disappointed when we missed out on him. I was a big fan of his at Brighton. Yeah, and he's, every time I've seen him for Chelsea, he's been great. I actually didn't think yesterday was his best game at all. I know he was playing right back, but any joy Liverpool got in that little spell all came down the left. I thought,
yeah, he did struggle for sort of 10-15 minutes there after the second goal, and then they moved him back into midfield after that.
But yeah, it's when a player can just move positions like that, central midfield to right back, and still just, you know, putting great performances, you know, that's when you've got a top player. Just obviously really intelligent, just understands the game, can just slot in anywhere.
Yeah. There's always been that link between sort of DMs and fullback. It's almost like a interchangeable position in a way. You need, a lot of similar attributes for defensive midfield as you do for fullback, but not every player can just slot in like that for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, go on, Jack. Sorry.
No, you carry on.
No, it's just, I mean, I agree with Jack. I thought maybe some other players maybe have slightly better games, but just in terms of his body of work this season, I think he's been like this. I mean, I know Jack's going to do some Liverpool boiling hots for the season. I think Caicedo would be the season boiling hot. We'll probably do some of the pod anyway for the season. I mean, he's just been fantastic. And yeah, I mean, if Lavia can stay, Lavia's kind of the key here in a way, because if he can stay fit and we can play this Caicedo inverted right back, Lavia, Fernandez. And Fernandez, you know, he's doing an impression. We'll start calling him Frank Fernandez at this rate. So the way he's breaking into the box at Frank Lampard, I'm only joking. But those three, if we can keep those three fit, and we spent a lot of money there. I mean, I'm always bemoaned that we spend, 270 million on those three, which is madness, really. But if we can, they look like the core of the team that can maybe push Chelsea to the next level. So, I mean, he's had an unbelievable season, so. We love him, and he fully deserved player of the year for Chelsea.
Yeah, congratulations to him. Looked like a fun night at the awards, certainly after a big win. I'm sure they enjoyed themselves last night. Right, as Brady alluded to, we're going to talk Liverpool for a little bit and just sort of let Jack enjoy the Premier League trophy celebrations and talk a little bit about the team and how they performed, because like Jack said at the start of the podcast, like a lot of people really thought that Liverpool might struggle this season. The Klopp hangover, Slot coming in, having a massive job to do. You know, City and Arsenal being so strong, the perception was they'd be so strong at the start of the season. Liverpool have been absolutely brilliant this season. And that was only their third loss of the season as well. I think they lost to Forest at home, did they? And what was the other game Liverpool lost?
Fulham away, right?
Yeah, just a few weeks ago against Fulham, yeah.
Yeah, so but even then, really, the title was wrapped up. Really, the only game they lost when the title was still in any jeopardy was Forest at home, which is amazing achievement. Let's hear your freezer for the season first, and obviously harsh to put any squad member in the freezer, but there probably is a few options.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's with champions, so it is harsh to put anyone in. I mean, I've already spoken about who I was going to put in the freezer, and that's Darwin Nunez.
Oh, right, okay.
And I mean, there was a couple of others that I could have mentioned, but
Chiesa? I thought Chiesa would be really good for you. He's not done anything.
Yeah, he was our only signing, Chiesa. He's it'd be harsh to put him in the freezer. He's just not had the minutes.
To be fair,
or he just isn't what Slot was expecting. But he's just not featured. There's a lot of clamour from Liverpool fans on social media to give Chiesa more minutes. They seem to really want to see him, but obviously just not fancied. He only ever seems to get used when we're like last roll of the dice, you know, chasing the game in a cup final. He came on, and yeah, other games where we've been losing or maybe drawing and needed a goal, he's not trusted him at all.
He's left wing, right? Yeah, he's left wing, so he's not in the Salah spot, is he? So he'd be more on Diaz's spot.
He's played on the right and the left. I'm not actually sure which is more natural. He's definitely been used in both. But probably,
I mean, he's got a big task getting in. Obviously, Diaz, Jota, and Gakpo can all play that position, can't they? So there's a lot of... it was a bit of a strange pickup. I mean, obviously, Liverpool have not really had any injuries this season as well.
We've had no injuries, so it was just signed as another body, another bit of cover, make the squad bigger. The squad probably isn't as deep as it needs to be, which I guess showed in the busy time of the season. We lost the Carabao final, and then went out of the Champions League. Kind of just not... We're having to play the same 11 or same 12, 13 every week. The drop-off's probably been too big in a lot of positions, and that's kind of showed when we have rotated, haven't done very well. But luckily, we haven't had to, because we haven't had any serious injuries to key positions anyway.
Do you think maybe that lack of squad depth meant that you couldn't go on all fronts? Like, you went out in the Champions League, I think it was last 16, and, you know, you haven't gone deep in the Cups. Well, you obviously went deep in the League Cup, but do you think that maybe why you haven't had that the Champions League run as well, the lack of depth in some positions?
Yeah, I think that's it. It just caught up eventually, the legs, like...
Yeah.
The midfield, Gravenberch, McAllister, Szoboszlai just playing almost every game. And Salah as well. I mean, people say these guys are fitness monsters, which they are, and maybe they can, but there's bound to be a drop-off eventually if you just keep playing week in, week out, 90 minutes. And if we just had a couple more players in those positions, maybe we could have been a bit fresher for the PSG game especially, but I don't know. Maybe PSG were just really good.
Yeah, they were, yeah.
They just beat us. Maybe it wouldn't have made any difference, just looking for reasons, but... next season, like, obviously we didn't buy anybody apart from Chiesa last summer, so some people did leave, so the squad was looking a bit bare. But
yeah, speaking of people leaving, you're obviously going to have to add something this summer with a couple of players leaving, but one notable announced today was that Trent is leaving Liverpool. We've heard Jamie Carragher speak on this, you know, today as well. How do you feel, obviously, as a fan, to see someone who's a Liverpool fan growing up, obviously through the academy, decide, you know, in his prime basically, that he's going to up and leave for Real Madrid, it looks like?
I'm not as angry as some Liverpool fans are, but yeah, I get it. Like, I don't mind the fact he wants to leave. In general, I've always liked seeing English players play abroad. In my lifetime, it hasn't really happened enough, although it has a bit more in recent years. And like, if I had a football career, only get one, I would want to play abroad. So I sort of understand that aspect of it, but obviously not signing a new deal and leaving on a free is kind of unforgivable, really. Like, he's just cost the club 80 to 100 million just by not signing a new deal.
Yeah. And obviously his age as well, being 26. Yeah, like you say, like, his value is so high. I mean, he's up there with the best right backs in the world. And also for teams that are going to dominate, like Real Madrid, dominate their games and be in possession a lot, where you're not going to be asked to defend very much. You know, you couldn't ask for a more perfect right back than Trent in terms of being, you know, high possession team in a league that, you know, like La Liga. Yeah, I think my take on it is that it's certainly going to taint his you know, reputation with Liverpool. I think, you know, he put something out and people talked about the honours he's achieved. I don't think he's going to be looked back fondly on by Liverpool historically. Because I think if you did care about Liverpool as a club, in the way that he almost is saying that he does, you just wouldn't leave for free at 26. I mean, that's just not something that you would do. So I think, you know, if I was playing for Chelsea, for a team that I grew up supporting or whatever, you know, I would not be interested in playing for Real Madrid at all. And I certainly wouldn't be interested in not signing a new contract and leaving for free. So maybe he felt like that was the only way he could leave, because they would probably never accept a bid for him. Real Madrid maybe can't afford to bid the fee that he's going to be. But what do you think, Brady? Last thing on Trent.
I mean, I think it seems like fairly strategic. Maybe he talked to his agents about running down the contract, which is obviously really bad. But to be fair, I mean, Liverpool had a lot of situations like that with obviously Salah and Van Dijk, but they're obviously a bit different because they're the other side of 30. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, I mean, just from a more macro point of view, I'll throw that in. I haven't said macro in a pod in ages. It is a shame that, I know Jack, that I agree with Jack, that it's good to see players like Bellingham and now Trent. Although I'm not a massive Real Madrid fan, it's good to see English players at elite European clubs, because I think that's, you know, something that, you know, other than Beckham and players like that, there hasn't really been enough of. But he will be for the Premier League. He's kind of like a bit of a poster boy, isn't he, for the Premier League? And he's a fantastic player to watch. Like, I really like watching him. He's a fantastic player. So yeah, he will be a miss for the league in that sense.
Yeah, for sure. Right, let's do warming up, Jack.
Oh, squad, innit?
Well, it's a harder to choose, but yeah, I've gone for Ryan Gravenberch just because he could. I mean, there's an argument that he would be boiling hot. He's been one of the best midfielders in the league this season, especially for over the first, you know, 25 games or so. But
he's taken a massive step, hasn't he, this season?
That's the thing. Yeah. That's why he's warming up. Under Klopp, I just didn't see what he is now. He was arguably our worst like first team player last season under Klopp. When he played, he looked a bit lost. I'm not sure exactly what Slot's done to unlock him and give him this sort of new lease of life, because the role doesn't seem vastly different. He's maybe playing slightly deeper, more of a six than an eight. But yeah, he's just been fantastic. That midfield three has just been great every game. Him, McAllister and Szoboszlai, they just run every game. It's probably, well, I mean, obviously won the league, so it's hard to say it's not the best midfield in the country. But yeah, Gravenberch, he's got it all, and he's so good at receiving the ball and in tight space and turning, breaking lines, and he hasn't offered anything high up the field. Like maybe he could. Because he does get into some positions to shoot, so maybe he can add that to his game. But yeah, because we were linked with a lot of number sixes previous summer. Well, the summer just last summer.
Wasn't that one that was about nearly done? It fell out. That fell at last hurdle. When he was linked to Arsenal.
Zubimendi was
there. Romeo Labia, wasn't it? Really.
The previous summer there was Caicedo and Labia, so we obviously have been in the market for this position. But yeah, it turns out we had the best one at the club all along. Yeah. And I just needed to put him there.
Yeah, I think outside of Caicedo, I would say Gravenberch's been the most impressive midfielder in the Premier League this season. And obviously still a really young age as well, 22. I love his athleticism. I think there was a goal that you scored last week where he just sort of just outpaced the it was McAllister's goal, I think, that he scored with the left foot, but the guy had the ball and he just outpaced him so easily to win the ball back to give it to McAllister. And yeah, he's been one of the standout players in the Premier League. I know when they do team of the season, if they do just one DM, it's going to be hard to pick between Caicedo and Gravenberch. But if they do two, I mean, it's pretty easy. I think Declan Rice would be the only player that would have, you know, some sort of say in that, and he's really been more impressive in the Champions League than he has in the Premier League. So yeah, Gravenberch up there with the top CMs in world football at the moment, I think.
I didn't realise he's only 22. Wow. He's really young. It just shows you, like, that. So, go on, mate.
Well, yeah, he He broke into the Ajax team really young, didn't he?
And then, right.
And got his move to Bayern, which didn't work out. So it feels like he's been around for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, still young.
It just shows you, like, sometimes don't go window shopping. You've got the players there. And like you said, you know, just last season under Klopp, he wasn't doing anything. Just a little tactical adjustment of a new manager can just kind of, you know, give player new life. So yeah, that can happen quite a lot.
Why do you think Klopp didn't really give him as many minutes last season? You think just performance, he wasn't playing well?
Yeah, I think that's it. Maybe he'd never considered him as a proper six. He was playing more in the eight role, and his performances just weren't good enough. So yeah, it was no surprise to anyone that he wasn't ever pushing for a first team spot. And it's not like any fans were saying we need to get this guy in. Like, he was just a squad man, that was it. And then yeah, maybe it's just the Dutch connection with Slot, something, some sort of chemistry or relationship that's just worked and everything's clicked, and here we are.
Yeah, sometimes it's just the sort of formation set up just suit players so well sometimes. And yeah, Gravenberg looks like he's certainly a beneficiary of that. Right, let's go boiling hot, Jack. There's so many options to choose from. I wonder who you're going to go for here, because I think that there is, you know, two potentially standouts.
I mean, obviously, yeah, there's plenty of standout players that I could mention here, and I'm probably going to go for the most boring answer possible, but just Mo Salah. Like, you can't not mention him here. The numbers he's put up again.
He's sort of gone off the ball a bit recently, hasn't he?
Yeah, this tends to happen most seasons with Salah. He comes out of the blocks absolutely flying. The numbers are just insane before Christmas. And then the last 10 games, he tends to tail off, whether that's just or the amount of minutes he's playing or his age or just a coincidence. It happens most years. But yeah, again, just another season putting up 30-plus goals and however many assists. And that's just, yeah, he just, that's what wins your leagues, those kind of numbers. And the way his game's evolved as well, the creative force he is now compared to when he first joined, and that's a sign of the, like, real elite players who can just keep finding a way to be effective on the field, even when a certain attribute fades. Like, he can't dribble like he used to, but his finishing's just got better, and his creative sides over the past few years has got so much better as well. Like, he's just top in numbers in the league for like both creating big chances, XA, XG, like whatever metric you want to look at. Salah's basically the best in the league at every single attacking attribute, from a data standpoint anyway. And I know there's always debates about his greatness and people compare him to players of the past, maybe because he's not like as an aesthetically pleasing watch as some players from the past. But yeah, it's just, you just can't look past those kind of numbers. And every year people think maybe this will be the year that he tails off. Like, he's well past 30 now, but he's clearly just in great shape and working hard every day and getting better and better still. And yeah, he signed another contract extension, so hopefully there's a couple more of those years to come of 40 plus goal contributions.
Yeah, he's going to be 33 to start the next Premier League season, which does feel, you know, really getting on for a winger. But yeah, this season, 28 goals and 18 assists in the Premier League.
He's got a goal or assist in every 67 minutes. I mean, that's making my eyes water as a Chelsea fan. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, Palmer last year for like maybe a little stretch was getting like maybe a goal or assist every 80, 90 minutes. But to get a goal or assist basically nearly every hour of a game in the league is incredible, really, at his age.
Yeah, and Salah's been doing that for what, like 8 years?
It's incredible, really. He is incredible.
Hilarious, his interview after the title win was wrapped up, where he said he told Slot, just don't involve me in the defensive work and I'll get you a goal a game or something. Trying to negotiate with the manager on getting off any pressing duties.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah. He's a bit of a throwback, isn't he? He just wants goals and assists, and a kind of a little bit like Ronaldo. I mean, he's a different player to that because he's more creative, but he is just so hungry. I mean, obviously, there was like, I don't know if there's rumours that Sadio Mane used to get annoyed with him because he was greedy, but he just wants goals and assists. And in a team where the rest of your wingers are not and the attackers are not quite like that, I mean, he carries the weight of the G/A, doesn't he? So fair enough to him.
Yeah. Who was the other guy or any other players in the mix for boiling up? Who else has had an impressive season?
Special mentions.
Special mentions. Yeah, we'll give you a chance to give a couple of shout outs.
Van Dijk and Alexis McAllister, probably.
Yeah.
The next two on the list.
McAllister is one of the players that probably is, you know, underrated in terms of what the average Premier League fan would think of when you think of Liverpool's team this season, but he sort of makes everything work, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's just a very intelligent footballer. He just does the right thing all the time, and he's, positionally and using the ball perfectly every time. I don't get to as many Liverpool games as I would like to, but when I've seen him live, you just notice even more. He's just so good on the ball at controlling the pace of the game, what needs to be done. It's an absolute bargain where we paid for him.
Was it 30 million?
Yeah, it was a release clause, but I'm surprised everybody wasn't in for him.
Yeah, I mean, Brighton like to rip us off and then they give you the good deals. So that's the... That's what
I think Brighton Town Centre has been redeveloped and they put a Chelsea plaque there.
Just as a quick macro sense, because we talk about Clearlake a lot here and the ownership. Liverpool themselves have American owners, and this season there's probably been a little bit of, question marks around letting Salah, Van Dijk and Trent obviously all run down to the point where they can speak to other clubs. How do you feel overall that Liverpool's run as a football club at the moment?
Referring to the contract situation, I've got to assume that was just always sort of under control. Like, well, the rumours are that Trent's been offered new deals regularly for the last year or so, at least maybe longer. He's just obviously not signed any of them, and maybe there's been something with Van Dijk and Salah as well, that there's just been ongoing negotiations, but maybe they've always been confident.
I mean, I sort of get it to an extent with Van Dijk and Salah because they're older players, right?
They're older, yeah, so maybe they want to wait and see.
But do you not think in a PSR world where, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold is pure profit if you sell him, that sort of letting a player like that leave for free, where you're basically costing your team 80 million in money available for transfers, as pure profit. Do you not think that's just sort of, criminal, really, that can happen?
I agree that is bad, but who, at the moment, with the information we've got, I don't really know who to blame for that. Like, the contracts were on the table. Do you think we could?
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously something Chelsea have done.
Maybe they thought the contract would get signed in the end, and
yeah,
it obviously hasn't happened, and he's gone on a free. But
obviously,
mark on their record. The club's obviously been run very well in general for the past since they've been in there. Especially,
I mean, you got Salah for. I mean, this was a long time ago because there's some appreciation. But didn't you get Salah for like 30 million from Roma whenever you got him? Like, just mental.
I mean, that was a long time ago, wasn't it?
A long time ago, and yeah, he obviously wasn't the world beater he is now when we signed him as well. He'd had a very good season for Roma, but obviously you know all about him. Like, he was Chelsea reject at that point, wasn't he?
Gone to
Serie A, scored a few goals, and then.
Well, I think a lot of Chelsea fans did like him at Chelsea.
Yeah,
I think you have to say that Liverpool have done some very good scouting over the years. I mean, to pick up players that they have, maybe they got some, like, maybe they got a bit lucky with Salah or whatever. Or mix of every signing, there is obviously a mixture of fortune with it. You know, some will go well and some won't, but you have to say they've had a lot more hits and misses in recent times, and you've got to give them a lot of credit for that. I mean, I can't remember too many signings that have been a complete dud, really.
Yeah. I mean, I guess just from the point of view of, with Trent, a similar thing happened, obviously, with Chelsea, with Mason Mount and with Conor Gallagher, where they were running down their contracts, refusing to sign new contracts, and they're basically the summer before, both academy prospects like Trent, so they count as pure profit, and they were just sold because they wouldn't sign contracts for wages that they believed, you know, were in the thing. And obviously that's 110 million that we've made from those two players to enable us to buy more players in the future. I just wonder if, you know, with the way the financial thing's shifting, that players like that, just that will never be allowed to happen really anymore in terms of players just leaving for free that are so, so valuable like Trent.
In general, the club's pretty switched on with these matters and has been and everything else. So you've got to assume that, like, obviously it wasn't the plan, but that they just really didn't expect to be in this situation where he would leave on a free, either they thought he was going to sign a new deal, I think the way the club's been running generally probably would have been sold last summer with 1 year left if they didn't think he was going to sign a contract.
Yeah. All right. I think that's all we've got time for today. We obviously have our second leg. We'll call it a dead rubber against Djurgårdens Gardens on Thursday, 4-1 up, obviously, with a chance to head to the Europa Conference final in Raw Claw. And we won't bother previewing that game, but we have got an absolutely massive game against Newcastle away on Sunday at midday, which I guess, you know, the fact that we've able to get a couple of results has been made, you know, to be, you know, not a must-win game like potentially it was shaping up to be, but still a really important game. And we'll try and get a preview for you guys for that game out before the kickoff on Sunday. Thanks very much, Jack, for coming on, and congratulations to for being champions.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
And thanks, Brady, as well, as always.
Cheers, mate.
As always, mate, be carefree wherever you may be, and thanks for listening.
I hope you're carefree wherever you may be. Thanks for listening. Hi, I'm Graham Lasseau, and you're listening to Eat, Sleep, Chelsea, Repeat with Chris, Craig, and Brady.